Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
When everyone is on the same page, getting things done is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that enables your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said. Done.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin O'Hara, and I'm here with my co-host, not my brother, but my co-host this week, Sean Porter.
Hey everyone, how you doing?
What's going on, man? Welcome back.
Thank you.
Third time's a charm on the Art of Craftsmanship podcast.
Always a pleasure to be here.
So Devin couldn't join us tonight, so I reached out to Sean, and he graciously decided to come over and hang out in the shop and record the podcast, which is kind of fun because Devin and I aren't normally together, and we get to be together, so you actually see each other. All right, so I have our quotes today. I'm going to try not to blast out the microphone. All right, so here, this is a combination of two quotes by the same person, and you can guess the person afterward.
I'm awful at this.
All right. To invent, you need a good imagination and a pile of junk. There are no rules here. We're trying to accomplish something. So that's the combination of, like I said, it's two quotes from the same person. Think inventor.
Oh, man.
Nope. Not old man.
It is a man.
Yes.
There's a clue. I have no idea.
Thomas Edison.
Unfortunately, that would have been the only inventor I would have named off the top of my head.
I can see you're like, I know there's an inventor I can think of. I just need to think of it. Yeah. So I like both of those because they're both like, they both just talk about the fact that making is just a journey, you know, like, or inventing. Like, so it's to invent, you need a good imagination and a pile of junk. Like, I love that. Like, that's that, like, hoarder mentality in all of us makers, you know, like, just, oh, I get this little scrap piece of metal, I'll just put it aside because I'm probably going to use that at some point someday. And when you need it and it's there, then you're like, yes, justification.
Yeah, we all have those junk bins of scrap pieces of wood and other things. It's like someday this will be useful.
Right. Yeah, all the like cutoffs, all of my like axe handle cutoffs that I don't have the heart to throw away. It's just like this beautiful piece of hickory that has like a beautiful palm swell, and it's not going to fit any good head. Like, maybe sometimes they fit the half hatchets, which is like kind of one of the reasons I keep them, but you know, they work well for drifts when you're drifting out other axes. Who is it? Daniel Donnelly had, I think he was using it for something. Maybe it was like a file handle. Like, he just like drilled a hole and put a file on it. I was like, there you go. That's a good one.
I made that laminated walnut ash handle, and I had the cutoffs from that. And I keep saving it. It was like, someday there'll be something where this will make a perfect wedge for some other axe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know, that's the thing. Yeah, I also like laminated stuff that just looks so pretty. It's hard to cut off. Actually, for a while, when I made the knife talk build along knife, I had cutoffs from the handle. It was a Bacody handle, and it had a brass lanyard tube and brass pins. I cut off like bits of it when I was shaping the handle, and I kind of hung onto them thinking that they would be kind of fun. Like, I just sanded them and oiled them thinking they'd be fun, like, you know, Patreon, you know, gifts or something, or just like
a keychain
random
out of exactly. Stamp AOC with the ear in it.
Right. And be like, oh, that's a piece of cut off from the handle. So I think Yeah, I had them around for a while, but I don't know where they are now. I may have tossed them. I don't remember. When I was cleaning up over, like, when I had COVID over Christmas, I was, like, getting rid of everything.
I'm always impressed when I see the knife makers, when they finally take... I think Green Beetle did it most recently with that collaboration knife he made, where he just took all of his Damascus cutoffs and then threw them in a canister with powdered Damascus and made a single billet out of it. And I'm like, I love that concept of... You have all these awesome pieces of Damascus that just didn't fit the knife. And it's like, oh, let's toss them in and make another knife.
That's like, I know Mareko Mamasi does that. He'll like make earrings and jewelry out of it, out of his cutoffs. Pretty cool.
I think Jeff Fader made some fish lures once.
Out of the cutoffs of the Damascus? Nice. That's awesome. Of course he made fish lures. I like the idea of like a random pattern Damascus made out of random bits of pattern Damascus. That's good.
I misremembered. It was not Jeff Fader. I think it was I can't remember Green Beetle's name, but it was him. He made the fish lures out of Damascus cutoffs.
Nice. Yeah, that's good. That's again one of those kind of hoarded things where this like little bits of steel and things I'm like want to hang on to because I feel like at some point in my life I'll like forge weld them all together and make some fun billet out of something, which will probably be trash because it'll have all sorts of holes and shit in it, but
everything is useful as long as you have imagination.
Yeah, exactly right. That's the quote, right? Yeah, so you just need a good imagination and a pile of junk. And the second one is, there are no rules here, we're trying to accomplish something, which I think is fun too because it's like that comes up often. I hear in other podcasts and people talk about that when it's like, oh, you can't do this, or like, you can't do it this way. Like, why not? It's my shop and my tools. I can do whatever the fuck I want down here. Like, you're not, I mean, I could burn all my tools for fun. Like, it's my tools. It's not going to do anything, but yeah, there are no rules. We're trying to do something fun here.
I look at it. I like to look at that quote as like a, if you don't know better, there's nothing that can stop you. Once you know, once you, you know, quote unquote, know better,
right,
there are things and rules and stuff like that. But if you don't know better, there are no rules. You just get to make something. And yeah, you probably didn't make it the way it should be made,
right,
or the best way to make it, but you still made something. Mm. And that's what's important. Like,
yeah, right.
We don't call ourselves, you know, perfectionists or masters or things like that. Like, we're makers. We make stuff.
Right.
As long as you're making stuff, you're succeeding at being a maker.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And I think like, you know, failing goes along with that because I probably never do not make mistakes, you know, like that's how you learn. Or even if it's not like a mistake at the time, you might realize later in your making journey that what you were doing was like not the best way, or there were things that you didn't know were wrong, in quote unquotes wrong, that then as you become a more experienced maker and that type of thing, then you understand better like why things are done a certain way.
Yeah.
And like, so they're wrong in the way that they should be done a certain way because it's better, more economical. It makes better sense. The end product is better when it's done a certain way. So, but I like that. It's like that ignorance is bliss.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, you just have fun making.
Yeah. And well, and I'm all about diving headfirst into absolutely everything. Like, I have been struggling for the last couple of years to try to decrease my number of hobbies. And every time something new pops up, I'm like, oh, that looks awesome. I totally want to do that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. No, I feel like we're both the same way in that, you know, we get excited about stuff and try, you know, want to start, you know, it's like, it's frustrating because you want to, we have the skill to do something, you know, like the dexterity and the general like composition and, you know, the mindfulness of how to make things. And so when you see something that's really cool, you know, it's like, well, if I just had these few tools and like these few things, I could probably make this really cool version of this thing, you know, because like, oh, I want to make that, you know. I guess that's that maker switch.
Yeah.
Flicking on.
For me, like, part of it for me is I'm interested in tons of stuff. Like, even outside of the maker community. Like, I was at a work function last week, and one of my coworkers is and this is unrelated to making, but he's really emotionally invested in the metaverse.
Oh, yeah.
And like really pushing that, like that's his side hustle and stuff like that. And the way he talks about it, he's so passionate and so excited about it that it's infectious. It's like, oh, I want to go learn about the metaverse. Yeah. It's like, I don't have time for that. Like, I've only got so many hours of free time in a day, and learning about the metaverse is not on that agenda. But it, like, his excitement is so infectious. And that's similarly with anything, like Oki from the extravaganza a couple weeks ago. He's so excited about axe throwing, knife throwing, and things like that, and it's infectious. Like, you get into it, and he's willing to teach you and teach your kids. Like,
yeah,
I love that he was just willing to teach my 6-year-old how to throw a knife.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's so true about any type of somebody who's passionate. You can't help but like have that infectious passion. I remember years ago I was talking to our buddy Trevor, and this was like maybe after our junior year. Oh no, maybe it was later. I've had a bunch of good conversations with him, but you know, after like long nights of drinking, but, this is one time, I forget how it came up, but, he was just talking about like artists and makers, like creative types, can usually hold a conversation with people who are like not within that realm. So like a doctor or a scientist or, you know, like somebody else, like artists have this abstract way of thinking about things that we can kind of generally grasp large concepts. So if you're like, if an artist is talking to say like a astrophysicist, right, we have a grasp on abstract concepts because we're always thinking about how to you know, combine concepts with an idea and put it together and make something that you're supposed to then like be able to say is like, I have this thing that I made that's based off of this idea. Right. And so we were talking about how, like, if you try to have a conversation about art with a very like non-abstract thinking person, it's hard for them to understand that like mindset.
Is that how you feel when you talk about art to me?
No, because you're a maker, right? So you understand that you have that grasp of like taking a concept in your mind that is relatively abstract and funneling it down into like an actual thing.
apparently 10 plus years with you all has warped my engineer brain into more abstract thinking. Right.
But it was like, you know, he's like, I can have a conversation with a scientist about some experiment they did that's very analytical, because like I've come from a place where I have to think about things in wild ways all the time. So then I can like, our minds are open to like thinking about more, you know, analytical things. But he said that you flip that switch around, and sometimes it's hard to like have a conversation about art with someone like that. And they're like, I don't know what you're talking about. It doesn't make any sense at all. Be like, okay, whatever.
I mean, first couple of years I was dating Kate, she would take me to museums and like abstract art. I'm like, why? It might be different now. Like, I haven't been to a museum in, I don't know, since I had a kid probably. So 6 years, 7 years. So it's been a while. And I'm sure growth has occurred in that time. But early on, I was like, I don't understand abstract art.
No. Yeah, I mean, abstract art is very conceptual. So if you don't know the ideas behind it, then it just looks like nothing.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, it's all about the idea, right? Where, like, a Rembrandt is about him representing a figure, or, you know, from like a biblical story, right? That's like what it is. But, you know, like a Jackson Pollock is about the idea behind painting and what it was, the action of it. So if you don't know his ideas, it's just like a whole bunch of dripped paint, which looks like the floor after you've dripped a bunch of paint when you're doing painting your ceiling, like the same thing. So yeah, actually there's a, currently there's a Joan Mitchell's another abstract expressionist painter. Who's one of my favorite ones, a show of hers at the BMA right now, the Boston Museum of Art, until August. So I definitely want to go see that. So maybe we'll figure it out one weekend. We can all go together. It'd be fun to take. Corinne and Nicole and I went to the BMA recently, but it had been a couple years. So we were there and saw that the Joan Mitchell show was coming up. So gotta go see that.
Definitely.
And that's
probably
completely
steal my 6-year-old, take him with me.
Yeah, right. And that's, you know, that's completely non-representational, right? It's just like paint on canvases. But she does it in a fun way. Like, I love Joan Mitchell's paintings because to me they're very reminiscent of landscapes. Like, this, like, lots of color, almost like flower beds, and, you know, like lots of stuff like that. So they have that like mentality to it.
If you haven't been able to tell, Dustin talks with his hands a lot.
You're hitting me.
And so he's, I keep waiting for him to hit the mic stand again.
You, Deb and I both do it. Like, you'll hear throughout, like, bong, ding, dong, dong. Or he's hitting the little, like, little springs and stuff. But
my wife does too. Like, I'm sitting here, like, my hands are just still, just yeah. hanging out.
That's so weird. I mean, whatever. But I just finished up a online class on assessment in secondary education, so like middle school, high school, and one of the assignments was to watch a video on body language, and then like figure out how different people use body language to do different stuff, and they were specifically focusing on politicians. So Sean got up to go grab beers out of the beer fridge. So thank you, Sean. Took one for the team. So it was like Donald Trump and Joe Biden and like Hillary Clinton and then some other political people as well. But it was really cool just seeing how different people, like some people control their body language, like when politicians come out like onto a stage and they're always waving and pointing at people, you know, that's all theater. Like mm-hmm. they're like, yeah, point at someone, make sure you like, oh, I see you out there. Like they don't see anybody. They know they're just excessive. They're waiting for the cameras to pick that up, you know? And then the whole, like the different hand movements they do, like the grasping and the touching of their heart and all, it's all this. And this guy was like a former FBI agent. And so he is like, his whole thing was body language. So he's like looking at their facial expressions mm-hmm. and things they do with their eyes. And he said some politicians like practice really hard before, like it's all scripted, like almost everything they do is scripted. And then there's some that like won't do that. You know, they'll just be like, no, I want to go out and be who I am. And like, those are natural things. Yeah. But then you get all these tells and stuff, all the different people that do all these things where you're like, oh, that's their thing that they do when they're like upset or they don't like a question or they're like being sarcastic or whatever, you know. But it was just fun, like talking, like watching that video. 90% of what that class was the stuff that I already do, or just kind of regular, boring educational stuff about assessments. Mm-hmm. You know, how to test your students in different ways. But that was like actually really fun. I was like, oh, that's cool. I was like taking notes while I was watching it and like picking up on all these things. And I was like, oh, it's funny. It's funny how people do that and like tons of gestures. And then the guy, I realized later in the video, it was like an 8-minute long video, but at the end of the video I realized, like, I kind of went back and I realized how gestural he was the whole time. His like hands are moving and he's doing all this stuff, and I was like, oh, that's so funny. Like, I wonder if that's just like, if that was part of like his idea behind it, was like, I'm gonna be super gestural, if that's just natural, you know. I mean, I'm right. sure it's just natural, but it's cool to like hear a you know, somebody who's trained in body language talk about it. But
yeah, how many classes do you have left?
Two more. Yep. So it's 21 credits total. So I just finished 15. So I have two more, one in the fall, one in the spring.
Cool.
Yeah.
End is in sight.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not bad. they're not too bad. It happens that CCBC, Community College of Baltimore County, CCBCC, Community College of Baltimore City is, all of their classes within this like teacher certification are, they're almost all short classes. So they're like 10 weeks or 7 weeks or something mm-hmm. like that. So they're really compressed, which is just hard to do when you have a full-time job and a yeah. family and hobbies and a YouTube channel and a podcast friends. And friends. Yeah, exactly. So inevitably,
Dustin and Nicole have been like, no, we're not hanging out tonight. We're like, what do you mean you're not hanging out tonight? We're bored and invited you over. Like,
that was hilarious. Last
not
week.
Fixing
you
guys
both texting you and Kate separately. Come hang out with us. We're drinking and we want you to come drink.
Oh, I paid for that the next day. I got really drunk that night on margaritas.
I know. I really wanted to come over. I think I ended up finishing the work that I needed to do around like 10 o'clock or something. But I think by that time, you guys, I assumed from like the earlier text. But honestly, Nicole and I were pretty toasted, like after spending like the afternoon, the partying of the afternoon oh, right. to my brother's son's second birthday party. I was like, whew. I was like, we need to slow down. But yeah, we got done. We're all done now, so we're good for this weekend. So, speaking of this weekend, speaking of things that you've been doing, Sean,
oh,
you
God.
Have been like in frenzy DIY house, new house mode for the last couple months, I guess, you know, because since you guys moved into your new house. So.
Yeah, so we bought our new house. We closed in December, and this thing hadn't been updated since the late 70s. It was mauve.
Yeah, that was awesome.
So gross.
Actually, I was going to say not as bad as your last house, but actually I think I would have preferred probably your last house just because of how like weird and eccentric it was and not just like 70s bad.
You mean the West Baltimore house?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was just old and then had a crazy lady getting old in it and doing weird things.
Weird things.
Anyways, mauve. And so the whole house has been under renovation since January and it's still not done. Like we're still trying to finish that up, but we moved in what, a month and a half ago now? Something like that. My project this week has been the pool. We had been waiting for it. Had an in-ground pool, but the entire system had been stolen or dismantled or old or whatever,
right?
And had been left to sit for years.
So, what do you mean by system? Like, what systems are there for the pool?
So, it has the pool is a two-level pool where the second level is a spa, and then that spa had a heater for it, and then for the pool as well. So, it's a propane heater, and then the pumps that run everything and run the filters and stuff. Gotcha. So, all the pumps were gone. The heater was shot, so we had to order all new stuff, and it took a while for that to come in. But that got installed today is Thursday. A week and a half ago.
Okay.
Last week, Tuesday, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been really pushing to get the rest of the stuff done, because I had to like pressure wash the pool and empty out the pool and replace some stuff and fix some things. And we got water scheduled for tomorrow. And we did that 2 days ago. I'm like, crap, there's so many things on this list that have to be done before tomorrow. And I have no idea when the water is coming. So it's not like I could leave it for tomorrow morning.
Right.
So we're recording this between 9:30 and 10 o'clock at night because I didn't get over here till 9:15.
Which is fine because we were eating dinner late anyway. But
man, that's just the latest. Like there's a pool house on the property that's slowly sinking into the ground, which we found out after we purchased it. So it has to be dismantled. Mm-hmm. There's a shop that's sort of on the property, but needs to be entirely designed and figured out. So like somebody was smart enough to run, you know, electric out to it. So I have power.
Yeah.
And it's about, I want to say it's what, 14 by 25 or something.
Okay.
With a single car garage door on one end. So it's great for a shop, but there's not nearly enough electric ran and no benches or anything like that. So that will be my summer project, is getting that running.
Yeah, that'll be fun. I love making shops, you know. I love being like, or just even like helping someone reorganize. Like I like doing it in my own shop, but like I really like, you know, helping other people make stuff and like try to plan out things. So like Devin's still in the process of that. Like We want to ideally shoot a video of setting up his shop, so we'll see if that happens or not. He's not as like anxious to get the shop up and running, so it'll probably wait long enough until we can actually do it.
What's a shop mean for him?
It'll be just like a normal homeowner shop. So he has like chop saw and all his power tools and stuff, things that he bought, you know, to be able to do stuff around the house. He'll have some stuff that I've given him, some kind of like hand-me-down stuff. And I, you know, just like, I guess just kind of the general homeowner things or like general handyman type stuff. But he is really interested in timber framing.
Oh, so, right.
Yeah. So I think he wants to make some timber frame, sawhorses. So that way he can like then do bigger timber framing stuff in the shop. So, for him, you know that shop space that was my dad's.
The first shed.
Exactly. So it's not super wide. I mean, it's got a bench built on one side and then shelves against the back wall. And it had metal shelves on the left, but my dad took all those when he moved. So I think he's going to leave it open, you know, just leave the like bench on the side and the shelves in the back. And then, you know, whatever else he needs, maybe some rolling things, you know, tools around. But he'll leave that center area open to be able to put bigger things in there to do timber framing, which is pretty sweet. So we'll see.
And he's got... Because your parents had what, three individual sheds along that line?
Yeah, so
and that's the smallest of the three.
Yeah, well, there's the shop which we're talking about.
Yeah,
that's like maybe 10 by 20, something like that. And then next to it is just a lean-to, That was just like from my dad's,
You
know, lawnmower, which is where Devin's lawnmower and like all outdoor tools and stuff. Yep. And then he built on the she shed,
right, the temperature controlled storage for your mom,
for my mom, for all of her camping stuff. So now that's become Devin's like theater room.
Okay.
He has like, sense. He like put the box that we made with the projector and all is in there, and he's got,
so
like,
it actually became a she shed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. So it, and then it's still got all the like storage walls, so it's like kind of half storage and has a cedar closet built into it and also, but yeah, he wants to build like another, you know, a timber frame structure or something there. Sure. So we'll see, but I'm excited to like help him set up. Although it's not as like with you, you have like the bare bones. So like, I know you thought you like, as soon as you realized you were going to like possibly have that, yeah, you like drew it all out. You had you're like grinding room and like all of it's going
to
be
honest,
awesome,
beyond the grinding room, I have almost zero plans. It's like, and even then, like, I don't know. It's hard. Cause right now when I look at it, I walk into my shop and all of the stuff from my old shop is shoved along one side. Right. And not just all my stuff, but also I'm a dumpster diver at my own house because apparently contractors throw out tons of useful stuff.
Yeah.
And so I've been going dumpster diving and grabbing all of the useful junk out of there.
It's been fun.
Yeah, Dustin has helped. And so that's all in a messy pile in the shop. And everything's shoved along one side so that I can walk from end to end, right, and yeah, do something on the other side. So right now the plan is run electrical and insulate that side. And then move everything over to that side and then do the other side similarly. Yeah. And it's like, right, it's such a big project that I'm like, I'm struggling to get down there to do stuff. Also, there's still so many projects at, right, the house itself.
Yeah.
And like most of my tools are in the shop, but there's always that subset are in the basement and there's a subset, right, in the garage. And so, yeah, it's like, I don't know where anything is.
Yeah. That'll be kind of interesting too. Once you get to a point where you can, once the shop is like up and running and you have it set up the way you want it, then because it is like 100 yards or so from your house, you're probably going to keep a set of tools like in the garage, right? So you'd have like the normal house tools, things you might need, screwdrivers,
yeah,
maybe a drill, yep, like whatever. So that's kind of an interesting thing too. Like what are those tools like, and how do you set that up and how do you organize that? Like, they're kind of cool too.
It's been really interesting thinking about how this house will work, because this house is way bigger than what we're used to. So it has a fully finished basement. So the house itself is something going around, what was it, like 3,500 square feet?
Yeah,
either way,
yeah,
it's big. Got a walkout basement and then a 2-car attached garage. And the garage itself is a big garage that has some storage space. And so I'm trying to think, yeah, like that storage space, that corner in the garage where the trash cans are, and it's got a peg wall there. Mm-hmm. It's like that will be all seasonal tools. So like, right, in the winter, yeah, that will be snow shovels. In the summer, it'll be, you know, gardening, weeding stuff.
Yeah, right, yeah.
It's also got like a 10x10 shed on the property that's lockable, that's right, and yeah, has electric run to it. So the 4-wheeler's in there and all like non-seasonal stuff. And mm-hmm, we'll probably keep the pool chemicals in there too.
Oh, yep.
And then the shop is like, you know, like I said, 14x20 something. But this will be the first time that I've had a shop where it doesn't have to serve any other purpose. It's only a shop.
Yeah.
And the fact that I don't have to like figure out space for a lawnmower, right, or a 4-wheeler to sit in there, or the, yeah, plow or anything else. Like, it's just a shop. And right, I'm super excited to have that freedom to just do whatever I want and not have to think about anything other than making stuff when I'm designing it.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's exciting. I guess. Cause you have like, you had the grinding room is what, like the last 8 feet or so of one end of,
yeah,
the shop.
Yeah, so one end of the shop has a 1-car garage door, and then the other end has like a 4-foot inset where they put the door. So mm-hmm, the door to the shop is under an overhang.
Right, yeah.
And that's part of a rectangular building. And so that area that's sectioned off by the doorway, right, I planned on making that a grinding room because I don't, like, grinding just gets dust everywhere.
Yeah, it does.
And if I can put that into a single room, mm-hmm, and deal with it that way, like, that would make my life a lot easier. And it's got a window in that room, so I could also just put a fan in the window and get some ventilation,
yeah,
as well.
Great. Yeah, that's a good idea. I like that. Yeah, so that last, say, not even a square. So, I mean, maybe a square, like 10x8 or whatever, like, or maybe a little bit bigger, 10x12, 10x14. So that leaves you with, like, 18 feet or something past that on the other side. That's just all the whole big rectangle. Yeah. So now you have like just all the space to decide what to do with.
Yeah. I'm just waiting to have the brain space and the time to like sit down with a diagram and draw things out. Like I already even have the list of tools and the dimensions of the tools. And I'm like, I could just focus for 20 minutes. I could get this figured out and start making moves in the right direction. But
yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess that's like, that's so tough as someone who really enjoys making stuff to be, I mean, but you and I were talking last night and you're saying how like you still are doing stuff like in this, the DIYer's headspace, right? It's like electrical and plumbing and, you know, and then also just kind of managing everything. And you've done this before with a house. So you have this kind of greater knowledge of kind of all the stuff that needs to be done and the practicality of what things need to be done. Like the people who drywalled in your cutoff for your water, or whatever, like, you know, like it's like all those things that if you hadn't done this before, you probably would just be like, it wouldn't matter, you know, but you have it all in your head, so you can't just ignore stuff like that. So you're like always, and you're also like to learn. So you're always like, you know, learning.
That's actually been a disclaimer. Whenever a contractor's at my house and I have the time, I'm like looking over their shoulder and I'm like, I'm not judging the quality of work you're doing. I just want to learn.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I used to do that when people would come into our school before I was teaching. And they would like come in to do something in the building to like fix something or do some type of thing that like might need to be done again in the future that I might be able to do without calling them. Cause inevitably when you work for a public school system, if anyone has to come do something, it's like you have to put that request in like a month ahead.
Yeah.
You
know? It takes like, 6 to 8 weeks like, to get anybody
ACs,
out there.
Yeah. The AC's not working. Okay. We'll call the AC guy. They'll be here in 3 weeks, you know, like, so I would always do that. I'd always be behind them and like watch what they're doing and ask them like, okay, how can I do this? You know, like what trick can I do to like re-jump a system or, you know, like where's the keyhole for me to open up the elevator if someone drops something in it, you know, like, so I definitely had that same mentality. It was like, let me learn. Cause of like, you know, a lot of it was just the convenience of wanting to do stuff, you know, not have to call someone else to do it, which is, I guess is all the same mentality, you know?
Yeah.
Knowing it.
Well, and part of me hates paying people to do things. And then part of me is like, I'm paying people to do things. Why aren't they doing it to my standards?
Right, exactly. Yeah, right. I see an error.
We had they put a door in for something in our bathroom, and the trim on the door was like, I don't know if it was because it was pre-primed or something. It had a bunch of bubbles along it, and they installed it and thought it was fine. And we're like, and we brought it up. He's like, oh, that's just how some wood comes. And the contractor was a man talking to my wife. And I was like, bullshit.
Yeah, right. No.
Like, I know how wood comes. That's bad wood. You chose bad wood. Choose better. And the fact that I had to tell him that. And the same door, like, it was a pocket door. The thing wouldn't close. Like, it was hard to close it. Like, it's not supposed to be like this. The other pocket door you installed isn't like this.
Right, yeah.
And eventually, it got around to, like, he tried to fix it, sort of, but it didn't really fix it. And then when his boss came out and looked at it and said, no, that's not good. He said, oh, the rail's bad. I'm like, if the rail was bad when you installed it the first time, why didn't you uninstall it and fix it? Because now you have to cut a hole.
Knew. Yeah, right.
Right, like you knew. Because now you have to cut a hole in the drywall to get the pocket door frame out and put a new one in. Like, if you did it right the first time, it'd be less work now. You just hoped I wouldn't, care? Notice?
Yeah, exactly, right.
Because it's a toilet in the primary bathroom. Yeah, I'm going to notice.
Yeah. And you would, maybe not be surprised, but most people probably don't notice. They're just like, okay, I guess that's how it is. Or they just let it go by and they're just like, oh, that sucks. And then they pay for someone else to come fix it later.
Yeah.
You know, which is bullshit because that's like just people being dishonest. You know, like, yeah, that's...
It's been weird because you mentioned I did this before.
Yeah.
And the first time I did this in our West Baltimore house, it was a small company. Like it was one guy that had a couple of subs he'd called in, but he did most of the work himself. Yeah. And he was right on top of the subs when they came in and made sure everything. Like this current GC that we're using is almost never at our house.
Right.
And the quality of the contractors varies significantly. We have some that are absolutely fantastic and some that I won't allow, literally won't allow back in my house.
Yeah.
And it's so frustrating. I'm like, how do you still have jobs? How are you still being put on things if you do such terrible work?
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just like there's a lack of pride in people's, like, you know, there's no accountability, right? When you work for a big company. I mean, yeah, there might be the accountability of like the person you work for firing you, but that's only if like the person really puts a stink in, and then also that's also if like your employer can afford to fire you and then try to find someone else. You know, that's like there's not this like this sense of pride in the things that we do in the world as much as there used to be, right? Because it's because the world is so big, you can like just Google a person in your area randomly, which I know you're like dealing with right now with like an electrical, because you don't want to just like hire any random person. You'd like to get some type of person that maybe you know, or maybe
you've
totally
got to call them still. I forgot
today. Yeah. But that's like, because it's so easy to just call some random person. And then there's like all of the big name companies, like say that like plumbing, right? There's like Roto-Rooter and Mr. Rooter and blah, blah, blah. There's all these companies that are almost nationwide. So the biggest, the big company doesn't care if they have one random dude who does a shitty job, and then like the they lose one customer, like they don't care,
yeah,
you know, because they're gonna have 1,000 other customers in that same county in that same state, you know, like so it's just I don't know, it's a little disheartening.
It's frustrating as a homeowner, like admittedly, some of the contractors we're using are more used to flips than they are, you know, homeowners. Mm-hmm. And so it might not be quite as up to the standard, but like some of the stuff just doesn't even make sense. Like the original electrician is one of the contractors I won't allow back in my house because he did such a terrible job. Like he put light switches to the kitchen in a different room behind a door because it was more convenient than putting them in a location that made sense.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I'm just like, no, I don't want to deal with you. I don't want you in my house. Fortunately, the guy that they call to fix all his stuff is great. I like him a lot.
Nice. Yeah. That's, yeah.
Like, you can hang out and have a beer when you're done working. And...
Yeah. That's, I guess that's kind of like, in general, it's like the lack of small community anymore. You know, it's because everything is so, so convenient, you know, like with like Amazon Prime. You need something, you order online, it gets there tomorrow from the giant warehouse that has everything. You know, it's like, it's everything is so convenient. That's like, yeah, there's no, I mean, there is in pockets, but you know, when you live close to a big city or whatever, it's like, it's just,
yeah,
there's so many people that who cares if like a company loses one or two customers, cause they're going to have,
or if they lose one or two companies, like you don't notice if they just go away.
Yeah.
Anyways, enough about my house woes. What have you been up to for the last week or so?
Let's see. What have I been up to? So I finished my classes on Sunday. And then for the last couple of days, I haven't really been doing much. I've actually been really busy at school because, we have, our end of the year show is coming up. Our senior show, which is virtual, is coming up. Mm-hmm. And then tonight was prom. So I was actually for the last couple of days working on building some like gates. So they're 8 feet by 4 feet tall, 2x4 frame with a, like a 2x8 foot piece of lattice attached to the top of it to create just like a fence type of thing. And then I built three of those to go along the backside of this roof where they're going to be tonight for prom, which is tonight. And, had to spray paint them black. The goal is that the Baltimore Design School prom is based on the theme is like a night in Paris. So they had all these different things that are Paris themed. They wanted to have some type of barrier there. And so one of the parents thought of like there's a bridge.
Yeah. That bridge where they used to have all the locks on it.
Yeah. Right. So there's like a bridge that goes over the Seine in Paris. I think it's the Seine, right? Yeah. Thames is in London. Seine is in Paris. So there's like a bridge where people would like lock a padlock or something onto it or a key lock. And you know, they like make a promise or something and then toss the key in the river. So, subsequently, all those locks have been like taken off because it was a ton of extra weight on the bridge and also like ruining the thing. But that was the idea. So I built these like wooden fences, these barriers, and then today I cut out all this just construction paper in like 4.5 by 5.5 inch squares and then punched holes in them and then gave them zip ties so they could like write a note and hang it on there. So
I was, make promises. And
yeah, exactly. Make promises and memories and stuff. Aww. And yeah, so it's kind of so cool. So I did that today. And then, like, obviously, anytime you're, like, asked to do something, it's like, oh, can you do this small part of it? But then along with that come all these other things, like, oh, well, what are you going to hang on it? And they're like, oh, you know, we're thinking of this type of thing. I'm like, okay, well, who's going to do that? And they're like,
Can you do it?
Yeah. And it was like never asked, but it was like, I was like, well, I guess I could cut it. Cause then like yesterday I got like an email from the parent who asked me to do it. She was like, you know, do you guys have construction paper or do you have zip ties? And cause I can't order anything now cause it's too late for Amazon. I'm like, well, yeah, it's too late. Like you asked me to build this thing like 3 weeks ago. Like what was your plan for it? So I was like, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. I would have,
like, facepalmed on that one.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. So I was like, I'll do it. You know, like I also at the same time have to like, you know, do a virtual blog for my 18 seniors and also hang the show for my sophomores and juniors and teach three classes, you know, each day.
I'm sure you have plenty of free time on any given day, right, exactly. Particularly these ones.
Yeah. Now I will say that maybe last Tuesday or something or Wednesday, I don't have my seniors anymore because they've done their classes. So like I do have an extra planning period, you know, but so I have like, I went from my first semester. It's like, we have a 5-class day to teaching 3 classes, which is 9th, 10th and 11th grade. So I have 3 separate planning periods or 3 separate preps is what we call them in education. Like I have to prep the lesson each day for 3 classes. Now, typically a teacher will teach like 3 or 4 classes, but they're teaching the same thing to all of them, right? It's the same grade or whatever.
If I'm teaching 8th grade geometry,
you're teaching it
3
like,
times. Yeah, I only have to prep class. 1 class. Yeah.
So I have 3 preps, and then that was first semester. Second semester, I have 4 preps because I have another class I was asked to teach. So I have 1 planning period to prep for 4 classes. And
it seems fine.
Yeah. And it's my first period. So I come into the school, I have like homeroom, and then I have 1 hour and 10 minutes or so, and then I teach for the rest of the day. I teach 2 classes and then I have a 30-minute break for lunch and then I teach 2 classes. So
that's why I get those text messages at lunchtime.
Exactly. Response back. Yeah. But yeah, so like now I have that extra time in the morning. So I have an extra hour or so when I'm not teaching the seniors because they were my second period. So I do have some time. And so I have time to do all this stuff, but it's just like, it's been busy. So busy at school.
I guess you've been sailing too.
And then Tuesday, Wednesday you sail. Yeah. So, right, exactly. So now that this was our first week of sailing on Tuesdays, and sailing was just like an incredible win on Tuesday night, which is awesome, super fun. There's a great video of one of the boats like going super fast sailing across. I'll show it to you.
No, I saw it.
Oh, did you see the one that Drew posted? Yeah.
Or the guy, the guy I work with that sails on Bare Bones posted it to our Slack channel.
Nice. Yeah, it's crazy. Like this boat, Monkey Business, just going like insanely fast, probably like 12 or 15 knots, just cruising.
It just
across.
Looks fast.
Yeah. And that was the thing, like, we were all watching them go by, just like, oh, and I didn't realize that we were right next to the committee boat, which is the kind of boat that runs all of the, they do the starts and the ends and stuff. And
is there any reason to move your hands for that? You're talking about the committee boat.
Yeah, I don't know. That's, yeah, it's just, you know, I gesture. And obviously they were impressed too, because they got a video of it, like, just this boat flying across under, going downwind, just full sails, just insane speed. So, and then and then last night we sailed, which is great.
Last night was fun.
It was, yeah. We were short 3 crew members, so Sean was on the bow, which you haven't done in a while.
Done in a while,
yeah.
A
I mean, years. Last season I think you weren't doing it at all because because Tim was there, or
Justin
was there, and then so Drew, my brother Drew, and Justin, they usually run the bow, and then I'm in the pit. Sean's in the pit running the like boss, running all the lines. I'm in the pit doing trimming, and then Jack and Charles are behind me running main and the helm, and then we have a new guy, Tim, and Kim, who both help out in the pit around as well. So Tim was there, and Kim was there, and Sean and myself and Drew. So Drew, who's not normally on the helm, was on the helm, so he was driving the boat. I was trimming in the middle, so kind of
Dustin's the only
person
one that wasn't in a weird spot.
Yeah, exactly. And that was kind of like on purpose, because like with what I'm doing, it's like right there, you got to be able to reach and do all this stuff and keep all the sails sailing the way they should be. So I was like, well, I'll stay where I am, and then I'll let Drew helm because he needs more experience. Yeah. And it was a moderate wind. It was actually more wind than we thought, which was kind
of
nice.
I guess either way, one of us would have been, well, no, we wouldn't have had a pit person.
Right, we could have
no matter what. Yeah. So like, you could have helmed, I could have trimmed, and then Drew would have stayed on four deck.
Right. And that's probably what we would have done if it was just the three of us. You know, like, probably, I guess, maybe. Eh. Or maybe, yeah, either way.
I mean, the way it was, like, it was weird. I've actually never done four deck by myself, other than when you and I do double-handed races.
Right.
I remembered almost everything, which was nice. Yeah. So it's nice that things are sticking in my brain finally, right, where exactly. I don't do them for a while and they're still there when I go right. to grab them again.
I guess that's that, like, you get to a point as a sailor where you've done enough jobs around the boat that you start to understand all the jobs and how they work together.
Yeah.
So, like, if you jump, you have to jump to another position. You might not know how to do it as well as the person that normally does it, but you understand why it works and what has to happen.
Right.
So it's like, you know, the process, like, and that's why we always say to anyone new and or people who have been sailing with us before, it's like, if you ever see something, just say it out loud, because we're all always looking. Like, I'm always looking at lines. I'm seeing how they're run. I'm seeing what's going on. I'm seeing what's happening. Like, I'm always looking for errors because I understand how everything should work. Whether or not I'm actually used to doing it on my own or doing it efficiently is a different thing. But yeah, you have that mindset now where you're, like, used to seeing, you understand why everything works the way it does. And because then once you understand the system, then it doesn't matter where you plug in, you kind of understand.
You understand what needs to happen for everything else to happen. And, and that took me a couple of years. Probably 3 years to start getting there. Like, I guess it probably took me 3 years just to get comfortable doing what I needed to do.
Right.
Yeah. And then I could start paying attention to how it was all working together and some of the tactics around it and things like that. But
yeah, it's a lot of different parts to make it run well. Like, you can sail a boat fine with minimal, you know, parts, but to compete well, you have to, like, trim everything really well and get everything running and going smoothly, and everything has to happen efficiently. So it's a different mindset, like racing as opposed to cruising.
Right. Cruising, you can have inefficiencies. Racing, you need to fix all of those inefficiencies as they're shifting.
Right. Yeah. And with racing, you're, like, you're doing everything as fast as possible despite the consequences. Like, with cruising, you're doing everything as smoothly as possible because of the consequences. Right. Like, if you're cruising around the world, right, you can't afford to do something really fast and put a hole through your sail with the boom because you're trying to do it fast,
right?
Because seconds matter, because they don't, you know. And I listened to On the Wind, which is another sailing podcast, and a lot of their whole podcast is about offshore sailing, so it's all cruising, you know. It's like long distance cruising, and so their mindsets are completely different on how to set up a boat and, like, what matters. And, you know, it's like, they want to put, you know, like, four reefs in the main instead of three reefs, where we were like, should we put one or two reefs in our main, you know? Cause, like, you know, we're not going to reef our main down to a fourth reef and still race.
We'll go home.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We'll drop the main and go home.
Right. Yeah. And we're not racing for money. So it's like, now we're done. Yeah. It's not worth it. But yeah, so it's like a completely different mentality to how to set up a boat for cruising as opposed to racing. So, but it's fun. It's fun to be back into it. I always, like, get excited when we get back into it. And then it's like, I don't know. It's just very, like, soul nourishing, you know, like,
yeah, I mean,
out of the water and it's like,
oh, I'm a nice. Excessively competitive person. And with the exception of the occasional games with our friends where everything is, they just put a buffer over anything I say and do during those times and kind of ignore it. No, sailing's about the only thing I can compete at regularly. And the weeks that it gets canceled, I'm like, oh.
I know, right, exactly.
I'm going to miss that this week.
That was my competitive outlet.
I actually wish. So we race on Wednesdays. I have raced on your Tuesday night boat a couple of times. And I'm invited out there when I want to, but I can't afford two nights out. I wish the days were reversed so that if my main crew got canceled, I could then go to my secondary crew. Like,
yeah, right.
If we race on Tuesdays and then BCYA was on Wednesdays, it's like, if Tuesday's canceled, I can race on Wednesdays.
Right. And also because, like, with BCYA, Baltimore City Yacht Association, which is what I race with on Tuesdays, and then on Wednesdays we race together on our boat. They're a lot bigger boats in that regatta, so they'll go out in higher wind.
Yeah.
Like, we were probably right around, like, 15 to 18 with gusts up to 22, 23, occasionally maybe a little higher on Tuesday nights. And that's pushing the edge of, like, what we would do in MPSA.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so I think BCYA is, I forget what it's called, sanctioned, as opposed to like MPSA, we're not sanctioned. So they're like, they're more an official, races can be counted against bigger, larger, like your accumulation of races that can help you points for a whole bay race type of thing. Right. So they take it a little bit more seriously, and there's more money down in the harbor, you know, so the boats are bigger.
There's
and
definitely
like,
more money down in the harbor.
Bigger, you know, all new sails, you know, like just, yeah. So it's a different environment. People take it more seriously, but we have a really good crew that's like good sailors. We love to sail, but they're the same mentality as us where it's like, you know, like if like it, whatever it's, we're not winning money, you know, like we're just paying money to sail. You know, like, we're not winning anything. It's like, you're really not, you know, it's like, yeah, you don't want to get in the collision. You're going to avoid a collision if, yeah. And you're also going to just like avoid really screwing someone else over just because like, you know, why would you? You know, if you can avoid it, like we're all out there to have fun. You know? Yep. So some other crews don't have that same mentality, and it's a little frustrating sometimes. But you know, it makes a fun competition, because there is like, you know, there is a competitive nature to it, and when you're like got to pick apart the rules to make sure you're doing the right thing, and you know, like that's fun sometimes to really like get into the nitty gritty. And there's a lot of that in sailing. So
I do wish more boats would come out. I know it's the first series, but like, I'd like to race against more than one other person.
Yeah. Yeah, that's always tough. Like this early season. Everyone's in like
half the boats aren't even in the water yet.
Yeah, they're on like non-sailing winter mode.
Well, and like historically we've had some pretty crappy weather during this series, but this series has been fantastic. Yeah. Like
Yeah, we had one race canceled.
Because it was too canceled. Much wind. Right, yeah. And it was canceled well in advance of the race, so nobody was wasting time. Mm-hmm. But most of them have been delightful nights to be in the water.
Yeah. Yeah. The first night was great. The second race was canceled. We had no wind, but it was a beautiful night. So yeah. Whatever. And then, last night was great wind.
Yeah.
You know, we were like, averaging it probably like 7-8 knots with gusts of like 13, 14, 15, which is fun. Yeah. It was good. Under control. It was a good night to be on the water. Yeah, but other than that, you know, I haven't really been doing much, not in the shop. I am getting ready for this weekend. I'm doing a virtual craft festival. I'll talk about that a little bit later. We're working on our barrel. That's the barrel top table, those three pieces of oak on top.
He is pointing to his right.
are what are going to be doweled together to make the circle.
Oh, didn't you mean to bring that dowel jig over?
No, I have.
Did you find one?
Yeah. Okay. I was telling you about the one that I bought, which was like $10 or something. So I went to Home Depot looking to get the dowel. When you do like doweling, you know, flat stock together, you do, you can use a doweling jig, which basically helps you to center or at least like you have the same distance from the top of your material down to where you drill your hole on both pieces of wood. So that way, when you put them together, the top lines up. You have jigs like that hold it. And then you have a more like analog system where you can drill a hole on one side and put a little metal pin in, which has a point sticking out of it. So then you put the pin in and you push your two pieces of wood together, and it gives you a spot on the opposite side where then you can drill a hole. So I was looking for that because I like that system. It's just like super versatile, easy. You can put it away. And it, like, I thought it'd be kind of nice to have. So I went to get that. And it was not the size that I wanted, wasn't there. So I bought quarter inch dowels, and they didn't have the quarter inch metal pins, studs and pins. They had like the, you know, 5/8 ones and the like three, you know, like, and the half inch ones, but not the quarter. So, or 3/8 and the quarter, whatever. But, so I was like, okay, whatever. So I'm at Home Depot. So of course I'm going to go look in the tool corral just for fun. Why not? I had a little bit extra time. So I'm looking around, and I was looking at the Craig jig stuff, and they just so happen to have like a center finding tool, which is basically just like a rectangular box that has, going down the center of it, it has a series of holes with like the metal sleeve, like Craig's have, straight through from like, maybe like, I guess not, probably like an eighth up to a half inch. So like a whole series of holes that are running straight down the middle of this rectangle. And then on the other side of the rectangle, they have a space slotted out for like half inch and then 3/4 inch. So it's like standard, you know, lumber, standard right. milled lumber stuff. So those are all 3/4. So I got that. So it'd be kind of nice. I just kind of put it on one side and then it just lines up. It doesn't matter what you want. And it has all the lines on the top. So you line up and drill it. So that'll work.
I had that. Yeah. I have two of them for some reason. I think my dad gave me one, and then I had, when I was working at Home Depot for some random side hustle, I had a customer give me one, which was probably inappropriate, but I really needed a dowel jig. Anyways,
well, we were building our tables at the time, and that's what I remember. Yeah, that's why I was like, I feel like I have a doweling jig somewhere because I built a dining room table with a doweling jig. But
so the main difference between the two doweling jigs is that one of them is a sandwich method where it has, similarly, it has all the holes with the different sizes for different size dowels, but the problem with that one is that my table, dissimilar from your table, was made from different thicknesses of lumber. Right. So it's made of pine wall boards from a barn. And then it also had some red oak from my dad, actually.
Right.
And the thickness of the wall boards was like 1.5 inches. And then the thickness of the oak was 3/4. I'm like, I'm not planing down this 1.5-inch stuff or cutting it. Anyways, I wasn't doing it. Right. I wasn't in my capability at the time. So the one dowel jig wouldn't work because if I'm sandwiching between finding the center
equidistant between the top and bottom,
right? Yeah, finding the center of the thickness of the board, it's not going to work with two different thicknesses of boards. So the other one I had let me set a depth, and then I had a rotational thing where I could rotate it to the correct size hole and then drill a hole that way. So it was, everything was 1/2 inch down from the top, not centered on the thickness of the board, which was surprisingly useful.
Yeah. Yeah. That definitely would be. Yeah, for anything that where it's like multiple sizes, like when I did the Lazy Susan, we laminated a bunch of stuff together, and it was all different thicknesses. So that I actually didn't dowel that. I just glued it all and then just like plane the top to size. But with this one, I'm going to dowel it because it's going to be a circle, but it's not like solid all the way through. It's not like a circular tabletop. It's a circle with a hole in the top. So it's only a 6-inch wide circle all the way around. So the joints are going to be just like 6-inch pieces that are held together, not the entire width. So I'm going to dowel those spots. So I'm not doweling across the whole thing, just in the spots where the circle is. So that way it'll hold together. So we have that. That's working. What else? I have a Tazzy pattern axe head that I got from Daniel Donnelly from the Donnelly Brothers Metalworks.
That's a beautiful head. Such a nice design.
Yeah. Hi, Tess. Yeah. So it was great because he was doing a live stream on Instagram and we were chatting and he was talking about all his axe heads. And I think somehow it came up where he was like, one of the things that he doesn't find often are like jerseys out on the West Coast. I guess he's in Colorado, I want to say.
That's not the West Coast.
No, it's not. It's out West.
But where he is. You're on the East Coast. Everything is out West.
Everything is the West. Yeah, the West. The West. Our country. The Wild West.
I think that's how the Midwest got called that. It was also West.
I'm like, Midwest.
The Midwest is not in the West.
Yeah, it's like East on the eastern side of our country, but it's still Midwest.
It's the western part of the eastern part of the country.
Past Appalachians is the West, the Wild West out there. I think in my mind, like Dan O'Donnell was out in California or something, so I always think like West Coast, but then I realize he's not that far. But yeah, he was doing a live stream and talking about stuff, and he was mentioning how he doesn't find many jerseys, and I was like, I'll send you a jersey. Like, you want to trade? Like, because I know he's got a ton of Tazzies because he ordered a bunch and got them from, you know, like from Australia or whatever, from New Zealand or whatever.
I don't even have a ton of jerseys. I would trade one for a Tazzie.
Yeah, right. Because we find them here on the West Coast, on the East Coast. You know, we get them. Like, and I unfortunately didn't have.
Big surprise. Yeah. New Jersey pattern axes are found more predominantly close to New Jersey.
New Jersey. Yeah. So that's kind of cool. I'm excited about that. That'll be fun. I got to hang that on a. I got to figure out what I have because it's got kind of a fat eye. So I'll have to get a nice, good handle.
Seems like a great excuse to buy some 8/4 white ash from the.
Yeah, I know. I actually have some pieces. I was thinking about doing that, but I don't think I have something. I think like maybe 20 is the. I think I'd probably get like a 20-inch handle out of what I have left over. So
it needs a little more than 20.
Yeah. No, I'd probably put a 30 on it because it's a splitter. So I want, like, it doesn't need to be super long, but I definitely want it to be. longer, and I like, you know, I think 30.
Yeah, I'd say between 27 and 33.
Yeah,
30 sounds good.
That's a big that's a pretty big difference.
It is, but just, I don't know. I am typically, if it's, you know, more than 3 pounds, if it's a full size axe head, you know, 4 years ago everything was on a 36 inch handle,
mm-hmm.
and the past couple of years I've come to appreciate the maneuverability of a shorter handle,
right.
and like what that feels like. And so I look at that head and 4.5 pounds. I don't want it on a 36 inch handle, but I don't necessarily think I want it on a 27 inch handle. Like that might be a little short for a 4.5 pounder, but
that's 27.
Yeah, I don't think that's inappropriate.
No, that's too short. That's ridiculous.
you're ridiculous. Sorry.
We just put it. So Daniel Donnelly sent me what do we have? A Holtz Brooks boy's axe on a 27 inch handle with a nice big palm swell and a wooden mask, which is super cool. And I just put the head on the end of it to see what it would look like. So, but yeah, it was definitely too short. I think it needs, like, I think, like for that size head, it's just so heavy. Like, but I guess again, it's just splitting. So, you know, ideally I'm normally splitting up higher than, you know, I mean, it's a splitting head. So like with felling, you know, felling, you're hitting sideways predominantly. So it can be shorter. It doesn't have to be long. Like if you're tall, it's necessarily.
Of. I mean, felling and bucking are the same thing.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, right. Exactly.
You only fell once, you buck a lot. Or you use the gas axe.
Gas axe. Chainsaw.
We don't talk about those pesky things.
No, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I have one over there. It's just, I never use it.
I have access to one. It's not mine.
Yeah. I don't have a fireplace, so I don't burn wood. I mean, I burn a lot of wood. I just don't have a fireplace. So I just like burn out of what I find around the property.
You don't have to burn wood.
Exactly.
You choose to create a fire find your happy place.
Yeah. And surprisingly, like for not having a fireplace, I have a lot of axes and I use a lot of them all the time to like cut wood and split stuff. And, you know, it's so nice. Not that I need
it. I would say you use less than half your axes.
I
only say that because half of your axes don't have handles and they're in a bucket.
Oh, well, yeah, that's true. So logically that is a correct statement. I said out of all the axes that I have hung, I don't use the double bits all that often. I just find that like a single bit works more efficiently for what I do. I use my cruiser occasionally, but the other double bits, I don't use that often, which is funny because that's kind of what really got me into axes was double bits. Like
they're so pretty.
They're
symmetrical.
So pretty. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That was like the first axe that I bought really, I guess, for myself was the double bit.
Weirdly, I did the same thing. Yeah. Like when I got into axes, a couple of years after you, two or three years after you, maybe more than that. And I really liked double bit axes. And for a while, that was all I wanted. And admittedly, my favorite axes are still double bit axes as far as like the ones I own.
Right. Yeah.
But man, Dustin, one of the Connie that he did on camera, I think it was that.
The Collins Legitimus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I swung that for Ben. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
This is nice.
Yeah. Yeah,
and the more I used it, because for a while I've been living on 28 acres with a wood-burning fireplace, so I was doing a lot of wood management. And having the right axe for the job was better than having an axe that could do multiple jobs.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, having a jersey, you know, 4.5-5 pound jersey for splitting was way better than my double bit that can both fell and split.
Right. Yeah, you had the Collins bonded. Is that the heavy jersey that you have?
No, the Collins bonded
no,
is
that's
that
the double.
Is the full size double that I
on
put
the
on
short handle.
The shorty right. handle.
Yeah. What's the one you have? What's the heavy one?
That is a Collins No,
not Commander. What is it?
I think it is Commander. I have to go look at it.
I don't think it's Commander. I can't remember. But that's a heavy head. That's a good one. It's got some good weight to it. Homestead?
No, I don't own any Homesteads.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, and the other one that you had that I really like is the what's the one with the giraffe?
Oh, that's my felling axe.
Yeah,
the great neck.
Great neck. Yeah,
I bought that one off of a guy. You and I specifically drove out to meet him.
Oh, that's right,
Frederick Thurmont area, and I think the guy's name is Brandon, but he had a bunch of axes that he was getting rid of to hopefully buy a house. I think he was trying to save money to buy a house, and he sold it to me for, I think, $20. But it has a giraffe on it.
That's awesome.
It's a fun axe. I need to redo the handle. Like, I tried to do similarly to what Donnelly did with this one, but done poorly. I tried to do laminated palm swells on that. And so it was not executed well. And so every time I pick it up, I'm a little unhappy.
Yeah.
Like, I pick it up, I'm like,
yeah.
I really wish this handle would break, so I have an excuse to rehandle it again.
It might be kind of an interesting project to try to pull the handle, right? Because, like, I mean, I glue in all of my wedges, but even still, like, you can, you know, I guess, you know, they come out occasionally, but
you can drill them out.
Yeah. And then, like, that, I actually did that one of my axes I had, it loosened up, so I ended up drilling out what I had, and then once I got the handle off, I kind of cleaned up the inside of that, like, wedge, but I left the wedge and then put another wedge in inside of it, so it actually has, like, two wedges, or, like, you know, the original wedge was still there. I just kind of cut a kerf through it and then drilled and then put a new wedge inside, which is kind of cool because it was, like, the hickory, and then the original wedge, I think, was something like bloodwood or bubinga, like a darker redwood, and then I put, I think, an oak wedge inside of that, so it's like this, like, light dark light, which is kind of cool. But I see people occasionally will pull handles and, you know, pull axe handles and be able to rescue the handle. I actually had a guy reach out to me recently and was wondering about this specifically. He's like, what do you do, like, how can I get this axe head off of this handle in a way that I can preserve the handle, because it was like a client who had a handle that was like that had some sentimental value to him, and they wanted to be able to pull it, and they were trying to do it without ruining the handle. So I gave him like a couple pointers on it, like drill a consecutive line of holes in the eye and see if you can get it to like close up something so you can pull it out, you know, just do your best to preserve it. But any luck?
Yeah, it was Collins Commander.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's that heavy one. That one's like four, like over 4 pounds, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a 4.5 pound. And that one, unfortunately, that one also kind of makes me sad to use, because I spent a ton of time. It was my first octagonal handle, and I blackened the whole thing. And the first time I took it out to split some wood, I was splitting some oak, and I didn't realize that the center of this, it was maybe only a 7-inch piece of wood, was rotted. Uh-huh. And so when I hit it, on the backside, and it sunk down in, so hard into that section that the front part of the wood, like, it sunk into the rotted section so hard that the front part of the wood then broke my handle.
Right.
I was like, oh, God.
Yeah, like, overstrike, but you didn't overstrike. It just went through.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I was so sad about that. And so then I really needed a splitter, so I just threw it on. I think I grabbed one of your axe handles and just threw it on a hickory handle. So it's not interesting. It's not overly well-shaped or anything like that. It's just been functional. Again, I'm like, if you just break, I'll give you a better handle.
Yeah, that's – I mean, the handle is half the fun of the head, right? It's like I definitely grab –
it's the part I touch the most.
Yeah,
I'm like,
I definitely grab the axes that are the most – like that have the most interesting and like the best feeling handles. When I grab them, like, oh, I'll take this one. You know, this is a nice one. It's got a really, really pretty handle on it. And then it's like, I'd rather like use a little effort and sharpen the axe head before I have to go and use it, rather than just grab a sharp axe with a not as interesting handle.
So. Oh man, I was down in the shop. Speaking of not sharp axes, I was down in the shop, and the previous homeowner ran wires everywhere, and not electrical wires either, like alarm wires, coax wires, speaker wires everywhere. And so I was trying to clear some of it away, and I couldn't find any of the right tools to do what I was trying to do. And so I had a big bucket of axes and I was like, well, I don't really want to cut the wood. So this blunt axe will do the job, right? So I pick up, I picked up my fireman's axe. It's like a 5 or 6 pound fireman's axe. Hasn't been sharpened in forever. And I don't have a 220 volt for my grinder. So sharpening it was out of the question real quick. I got to cut the wire and it just doesn't cut it. I hit it like 4 times, just there. I'm like, so I picked up my birthday present from you, which was down in the
modified,
shop.
Yeah,
the modified half hatch, and I'm like, one hit, and just I didn't even hit it hard, just cut it right away. I was like, oh wow. Well, I suppose a sharp axe will do the job.
You're just like jamming the wire into whatever surface below. With them, like, dink, dink. I mean, you'd think like metal that's been like ground to a relative edge at some point hold its
right.
I'm always surprised when I get an axe and it's so dull. I'm like, how does this even get like this? Like, I don't know. I just don't know.
How much deferred maintenance?
How is it so dull? Like, is someone purposefully dulling it? You know, like, it was obviously used at one point. But
did you hit
so
a rock?
Dull. Yeah.
I mean, the fireman's axe has an excuse. It could have been used to break down a metal door.
Right, exactly. A fireman's axe doesn't really need to be super sharp. You know, it's not designed
to, it just happened
to be
the one axe that was there that had a handle on it that I could find right away. Yours was, the one you'd given me was like sitting on top of something back behind something else. Yeah. And I just happened to find it later. I was like, oh,
this will work.
This will work better.
All right, well, speaking of...
Or what,
some household
in?
Things. I have a quick DIY household trivia for you. We'll see how well you can do in a general trivia for general household DIY knowledge.
All right.
This is 20 questions. All right, number one, what is the first thing most power tool manuals discuss under their power tool safety header? A, keep work area clean. B, know where the off switch is. C, hold the handle firmly. Or D, dispose of the power tool's safety guard. Count out a couple of those.
I mean, D sounds like a solid first actual option.
Exactly,
but,
what most people do. But
I'll go with B.
B, know where the off switch is. All right. So this is a, I don't know the answer. I'm actually choosing, so we'll see. It'll give you your score at the end. All right, number two. What does the lumber grade S4S stand for? S4 as in the number 4, S. Sanded 4 sides, surfaced 4 sides, standard 4 structural, or lumber grade used only for straight parts of a 4-story house? Why are D
why,
so why stupid?
Why is D such a terrible answer?
S4S.
I want to say C on that one.
Standard for structural.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it was like sanded 4 sides, sanded, surfaced 4 sides. Neither of them.
Yeah, but they use terms like furniture grade for stuff like that, but standard for that's also a ply word.
Right.
I like standard for structural.
Yeah, okay.
Although... swapping a number for the word 4 seems unreliable for an answer, but
standard 4. Oh yeah, right, exactly. All right, number 3. What determines the style of kitchen cabinet doors? A, the knobs. B, the style of the kitchen cabinet shelf liners. C, the fridge. Or D, the hinges. What determines the style of kitchen cabinet doors? The knobs, the kitchen cabinet shelf liners, the fridge, or the hinges?
What?
What determines you said the style of kitchen cabinet doors?
Style of kitchen cabinet doors. And my options are the knobs, which is no.
The style of the kitchen cabinet shelf liners.
What the fuck is a shelf liner? Pardon my language.
I guess the paper that goes on the shelves.
So that's a no.
C, the fridge.
Also a no.
Or D, the hinges.
I mean, are we talking about soft close or not soft close? So, like, the style of a kitchen cabinet door is like shaker style or flat panel. Like, that's how I would define the style.
Right.
And what changes that is like what the face of the door looks like. Like, a shaker style has a square outline on it. There's more decorative ones that I don't know the names of because they're ugly.
So what?
This is a dumb question.
I guess it's like, what two things go together? Is it the knobs in the style or the hinges in the style?
The knobs. Or the
fridge. Okay. Okay. I don't know.
This quiz is dumb. It just lost all credibility.
Dang. What is applied to plastic laminate to adhere it to the countertop? Nonstick plastic laminate duct tape, carpenter's glue, construction adhesive, or contact cement?
We'll go with construction adhesive.
Okay. Construction adhesive. What are batter boards used for? A, to square the excavation. B, as fascia board on a gable end. C, boards to keep batter moist so there's no chance it can pour out of the bowl. Or D, to trim a window. Square excavation, fascia board on a gable end, trim a window, or keep batter.
As a homeowner, am I expected to know what a batter board is?
I guess so.
Do you know what a batter board is?
I do. In the context of building the smithy. I think.
Which one had to do with squaring something?
Yeah.
We'll do that one.
That's what I would say too.
If I were to guess what a batter board was, I would say it's a board that people put mud on before they put it on a wall.
Yeah, right. That kind of makes sense. Except for that would be like...
But that's none of the answers.
No. All right. Number...
Four? Five?
I clicked on next page and didn't go to the next page.
20?
Oh my goodness. Okay, hold on.
This is what happens when Dustin runs things.
I'm running a quiz that I didn't actually go all the way through before I started. Okay. Hold on 1 second. Go that. We'll go that. Sorry, it like cleared out my thing. So that and that and that. Okay.
I'd say what he's doing, but I don't know what he's doing yet.
Next
so.
Page. I was re-clicking the answers again because they just got rid of them. Okay, I just got rid of our answers again. All right, we're going to stop there.
All right.
Congratulations. 20. You got some points, and I can't tell you the answers. So, look, it says, like here's one through five, and then I clicked the answers, and I clicked on next page. And it even says, like, this is 1 through 5 of 20 questions, and you'll learn your the overall score at the end. So I put in the answers, and I clicked next page, and it just deleted all the answers.
It's weird. It also won't let me go to the next page without...
Putting in the answers.
Putting in the answers. So yeah. I can just skip the ones we've already not done.
This is captivating trivia on the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. I like doing trivia. It's fun, but only when I can actually get to the next page of the trivia.
Yeah.
It's not below it, right?
No.
Yeah. No. Okay.
No. Just all a right. bunch of ads below it. So if you know the answer to those questions, and we were wrong, please let Dustin know in the comments.
Batter board. The only one that I think I'd... Well...
I'm going to look up what a batter board is because...
So, yeah, I think that's the square, the excavation is batter boards. They're like the things you put in. I think applied plastic laminate to adhere it to the surface of the countertop, maybe contact cement.
You know, yeah, it's like a laminate countertop. I don't care.
Yeah, construction adhesive, contact cement. It could be knobs or hinges.
What was the other question that actually made sense? Oh, the first one, the S.
Oh, S for S. Yeah, what does S for S stand for? Lumber grades. Stand for surface. Might be a surface, four sides. Surfaced or sanded.
S for S stands for surfaced on four sides.
Surfaced, yeah. Okay. I wonder if that's different from like the... for us. I wonder if that's like in timber framing. I don't know. I mean, because like you have standard construction grade, you know, 2x4s, 2x6s, they all have the bull nose, like, but are those our S4S or like is that something different than that? I don't know. Yeah. The only thing I know like is that with timber framing you have like you have ones that are surfaced on all four sides, so it's exactly what it says it is, like 8x8 or 10x10 or whatever it is. And then you have ones that are milled to those sizes, but they may be a little short by like a quarter of an inch or an eighth of an inch. And so there's a different type of, like a different type of how you organize your cutting when you're doing, timber that is not milled perfectly. So you measure out from two faces. So you have like an inner face and a top face, and all the measurements go from those faces instead of measuring.
Right. Like those two faces are square to each other and flat.
Yeah, exactly.
And everything is referenced off of those.
So if like, so instead of like saying you're putting like a mortise in the middle of an 8x8 timber, you're putting a mortise exactly at 2.5 inches from the edge of your reference face. Right. And so it doesn't matter what the other end is. It may end up being 2.5, but it may be 2.25 or 2.75. So as long as you have your reference face and you mark it and you know what that reference face is for all of your things, then it doesn't matter. So that's my only like reference for what S4S could be like surfaced on four sides. All right. Well, let's see.
Quiz is the best.
Yeah. I tried. It says,
it's not like you warned me ahead of time.
1 to 5 of 20. Here are questions.
To know if this is a DIY homeowner thing. Like how many, I want to quiz the homeowners. How many of them know what a batter board is or what S4S stands for on lumber?
Yeah. Right.
I've been a homeowner before and I've never I've heard the term S4S, but never enough to like commit to memory.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And that question about the cabinet doors style was just wrong.
There's a lot of questions. This is the other one that I found, but it was a little bit too like broad. It's like, how much should you plan to spend on home maintenance each year if your home is worth $300,000?
A lot.
And the questions are 0, 1,000, 3,000, or 30,000. So it's like a percentage. You know, is it like 10% or 1% or 0.5%? I don't know.
10% sounds right. No, 30. That's 30,000. Sorry, 3,000 sounds right. So 30,000 sounds excessive.
I can't even like quickly. Hey, yeah. So 3,000. Yeah. The spending doesn't stop when blah, 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 blah. 1%. That's what it says. So there's the other one, but that one was a little bit, it was like, I could scroll through some of those questions and I was like, I don't know. I want to have more fun ones, but oh well. And on that note, we're going to wrap up the podcast there. Did you find a recommendation?
I think I'm going to do the one. So it's a YouTube recommendation and they don't produce a ton of content, but it's called ClickSpring. And they don't, you know, I'm going to go with the Art of Craftsmanship pattern of recommending people that don't need recommendations. They don't need my recommendation. They have 617,000 subscribers.
Yeah.
But it's, they create some of the most intricate stuff I have ever seen on YouTube. And it is just a pleasure to watch. They've only got like 84 videos out. They just put one out about 6 days ago that I haven't watched quite yet.
What's that one about?
It says the Antikythera Mechanism episode 11 inscribing. Anyways, it's a multi-step. I don't know. It got 201,000 views in 6 days. So,
right.
Anyways, just the most meticulous stuff. Like it's the stuff that they're creating is so fine and so detailed and it, I can't even imagine aspiring to that. Like, you know, I look at some makers and notice how precise they are on certain things. I'm like, oh, I can totally get there someday. Like,
you're right.
You know, like the ability, what a mill would give me as far as giving me some precision and the ability to be more precise on what I'm making. But right. This, the ClickSpring or Click, is that ClickSpring, what I said?
ClickSpring, yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, ClickSpring, just, it's so far out there. It's like, they are a master in what they do, and it is phenomenal.
Nice. Yeah, I've heard reference of ClickSpring before multiple times from different places, like big makers. I feel like Adam Savage has mentioned them.
I think I found it through Adam Savage.
Yeah. Yeah, so, like, and I just haven't, I mean, I think I've looked before, but I don't know, I have to check it out, but. Apparently it's good stuff. All right. So my recommendation for this week is the Virtual Craft Festival, which is actually on Saturday, which if you're listening to this, the day it comes out, it's on Friday. So it's tomorrow morning, and I'm actually going to be one of the presenters for the Virtual Craft Festival. I will be presenting from 9 to 10 a.m. on Saturday morning. And that'll be over on YouTube, so you can just tune in there. I have a set live that'll go live at 9 a.m., so I'll be doing that. And I'm going to be working on doing a prototype for a knife that I'm working on. So I'm going to make a wooden prototype, which is just kind of a fun process. And it's a different mindset of creating the final piece, because you can make quick adjustments to a piece of wood. You can glue things on, you can cut things off, and you can really like kind of zero in on a shape that you want. And so I've done that for the last couple knives I made, and it's been really beneficial. So I'm going to show that process. But the two people who are kind of running that are Carl Jacobson, and you can find him over on thewoodshop.tv on Instagram, at thewoodshop.tv, also on YouTube, Carl Jacobson. So he's helping to run it. And then also JP Woodwork. So that's Jamie Page. His Instagram is at JP_woodwork, and he's another woodworker, wood turner. He reached out to me to participate in this virtual craft festival. So that'll be on Wednesday. There'll be 16 different makers going an hour each, so an hour live all the way throughout the entire day.
Wednesday. It was weird. Sorry.
Saturday. Okay. So that's Saturday. And that's Saturday Eastern time starting. It's going to be starting if you're in the U.S. It's going to start at 5 a.m. and then go until 9 p.m. So every hour. So there'll be a live.
5 a.m. is really early.
It is really early. But they start it because like over in the U.K. and in Europe, that's like a normal time, right? So they have some European makers who will do their early morning stuff, which is 5 a.m. Okay. So that's like 10 a.m. here, you know, on the East Coast, for 5 a.m. in the UK. So they have some early morning guys, and then it'll be in the time where it's like kind of standard, like cool. US time. So I'll be 9 a.m. And then there's a bunch of different makers. So I'll shout them all out. You can head over to YouTube and you can find, I did a community post there and posted about it with the different time slots. And then I also posted a little bit about it here on Instagram. So,
you know, I just, my most recent knife that I'm in the process of making, I made a template of. And so I'm super excited to see your process for that, because I felt the last couple that you've made, like I've gotten to hold them, but I wasn't around for how you made them. So I'm curious how you do it.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be fun.
And then you can come over and jump in my pool.
Yes. I know. It's so exciting. Awesome. Yeah. So I'll be doing that. So check that out, and check out both Carl Jacobson and Jamie Page on Instagram, JP Woodwork and Woodshop TV. Is that what it was? I forget.
Yes.
But yeah, so it's kind of fun. They've gotten some good makers on to do different stuff, and it should be an interesting day. They'll be in and out, and like it's going to be on. Like I said, it's going to be on YouTube. So. If you're interested and you have some questions about what I'm doing for the prototyping, pop in. You can ask questions or if
no. You're doing. What's going on. Sorry, you're doing yours on YouTube. How can we find? How can we find? Is it one of these channels that you just recommended? Is how we find all the rest of them?
So that's a good question. I don't know for sure. So there was an email, there was a website that was sent to me that I tried to go to that didn't really go to anything except for an old YouTube video, which was called, where is it? I have it somewhere here. Let's see. It was something like crafty makers or something. I don't know, but
that
I will try to find
that might be useful information.
Yeah, I'll find that out and I'll put it in the show notes below. But yeah, so I think there's like supposed to be a website where you can find it. Otherwise I'll do my best to post the link. I have the links for all of the different channels and the time. So I will post that to Instagram the day before. I'll post that tomorrow on Friday, or when you're listening to this on Friday, it'll be posted there. So that way, if you want to, you know, pop on to an early one or whatever, you'll have the links to the channels.
Cool.
All of the lives will be through YouTube. Apparently not all the makers have, you have to have 1,000 subscribers on YouTube to be able to do a live stream. So there's another platform that helps to do a live stream through YouTube, even if you don't. So they can all be found through the link. So I'll post the links on the show notes here, and I'll also post them on Instagram for all the different makers who are going to be participating in the festival. So I do have that. So I have all of their links and the times when those links are. And also the times are based off of the time period. So there's GMT, EDT, PDT, what that means. Eastern, I don't know. But the different time slots. They have them all there. So depending on where you are, if you're in the UK or if you are in the US, there'll be different time slots for that. And those times are all there. So you can check them out there. All right. Well, anything else?
PDT is just Pacific time.
Pacific time. EDT is not anything. It should be EST, right? Eastern Standard Time.
Well, so GMT. I don't know. I just looked it up and it's like PDT or EST. It would...
Pacific.
It's Pacific Daylight Time. Daylight. So Eastern Daylight Time, as opposed to Savings Time, Eastern Standard. So PDT, oh, maybe that's it. Maybe because we're in Daylight Savings, it's Eastern Daylight Time, EDT. And when we fall back, it'll be Eastern Standard Time. Learn new things every day.
Yeah, crazy. I was already EST. So
oddly enough, that like the PDT thing came up a while ago, and I didn't have the energy to look it up at the time. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna figure that out now.
It's amazing how you can no longer bullshit anyone because Google's right in the palm of our hands.
Seriously, save my marriage.
Yeah, exactly.
I am 100% right until I am proven wrong, and Google makes that very fast now.
Right, exactly. There's just no reason to argue. Just do, okay, you're right. I'm happy to say that.
Happens so often for me. So less often for my wife. She occasionally says you're right.
I think that women are less prone to standing their ground unless they really know they're right.
I really know I'm right until I'm wrong.
Exactly. Yeah. I think men are more stubborn. Now, obviously, that's a generalization, but like, yeah, we're willing to like stand for what we think is right, even if we're like, we're pretty much right. But like, yeah, everything I've always been told is this one thing.
All right. So is Devin coming back next week, or do I get to come back next week too?
We'll see. So he may be recording with me earlier in the week. It depends. He's got a really busy week and some stuff going on. So either he'll be back or we'll have Sean back again to co-host with us. So
all right.
I appreciate it. All right, everybody. Well, thank you all so much for listening. If you don't already, please head over to YouTube and subscribe to our channel. Check out our videos and head over to Crafting a Life I Want for Sean on YouTube as well. You can head over to Instagram, find him there at Crafting a Life I Want on Instagram. And you can follow Devin and I both on Instagram at the Art of Craftsmanship and at the Art of Camera Guy. And if you want to support us any further, which would help out for the podcast and the channel and everything that we do, you can head to patreon.com/ the Art of Craftsmanship or / the Crafting Life I Want.
Yes, no doubt, though. Just no Crafting Life I Want.
Crafting Life I Want. So you can support all of us over there. So we're all just having fun making stuff and putting stuff out there for you guys to enjoy. And any support that you give is greatly appreciated. So thank you all so much for those patrons who already support us. Thank you all so much. And like I've said, for the last couple of weeks, we will have some things coming out. I am in the process of making some things to send to our patrons. So keep an eye out for that. I have reached out to you for your addresses and you know that. So things will be coming to you in the mail. Other than that, that is all for this week. We will be back again next week. Either be Devin and I or Sean and I will be back again. And we will have some more fun things to talk about, like always. All right, everybody. Thank you all so much for listening. And we will talk to you next time.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.